I remember really wanting to hit 1 million subscribers, and I did it, and then I celebrated for like 5 minutes, and then I was like, okay, now I just feel more pressure. And my brain wasn't like, okay, now I want 2 million. It was like, all right, well, you did it. And there's like this interesting thing with the way that human brains perceive numbers, because you would think like 2 million would be just as exciting as 1 million, but it's not. We don't think linearly, we think logarithmically or even exponentially. So like, to get the same excitement factor as you got from 1 million, you would need probably 10 million.
Okay. Well, Thomas, man, welcome to MindMeld. It's so great to have you here.
Thanks for having me on the show, Josh.
Yeah, man. Honestly, it's pretty wild, like, speaking with you today because, you know, I think like many people, like, you've inspired me so much just watching your YouTube content, seeing what you've been putting out on Notion, but even just the years of content you've been putting out. So I do have questions about like your YouTube content creation, entrepreneurial career. Like, you're doing so much and you're doing probably a million other things that we don't even know about behind the scenes. But I think where we can start today is sort of like your newest venture, at least the one I think that you're kind of focusing on, which is these Notion templates. And you're making $3,000 a day selling Notion templates, dude?
Something like that. Yeah, I mean, it's stabilized between 2 and 3K a day. And then we just released our video on the Thomas Frick Explains channel going through it. So I'm interested to see what that does to ongoing stable sales, because we've had a few big promotions to our list and that results in some spikes. But personally, the actual daily sales are very interesting to me and the funnels around that.
Yeah, dude. So tell me a little bit about that. So the one that you just posted, I actually just watched it last night after you posted it. Mm-hmm. That was for Ultimate Brain. So you have two main ones. Is that yes. The one that you're kind of focusing on right now?
I mean, that is, yeah, I guess the main focus, the main launch right now. It does seem to be the most interesting template for most people, which makes sense because the other one, Creator's Companion, is a very specialized tool for serious content creators. We do have a bundle version and quite a few people do upgrade to that. But I think Ultimate Brain is going to be the one that has ultimately a higher reach because it's just, you know, for anybody who wants to use Notion as an all-in-one productivity system.
Yeah. And what really kind of struck me with it is like, it really is the ultimate productivity system, and Notion was the productivity tool, but there was really no system. Like, if you don't have a system in place, it's kind of easy mm-hmm. to get lost and make things worse almost. Like, it's all over the place. You have random pages here and there. No one's using databases, and there's pages within pages. Easy to get lost. But you've created mm-hmm. this like system that, to me, it's like the perfect mix of Tiago Forte's Para plus GTD. So maybe for people who don't really know about some of these like fancy terms, like, maybe you can explain like how you came about those terms and those systems and put them together into this one amazing system.
Yeah. So I'll kind of start at the beginning. When I got into Notion, the original thing I was trying to solve was a company wiki. We had gone through all these different options. There was one that like literally took Google Docs and created a website out of it, not unlike Supers and the Potions now that are doing the same for Notion. And then I think it was literally when I discovered that Notion had a Loom integration, which is, for people who don't know, Loom is this amazing tool that lets you record your screen, you know, talk out a process, and then the video is instantly uploaded. The URL is on your clipboard. And with Notion, you literally can just paste it in there and boom, you've got documentation. I'm like, the speed of documentation creation I can do with that is better than anything else. So we're going to use Notion. And then I started playing with databases and I go, oh, you know what? This is potentially the tool that will help me solve another problem I've been having, which is I want a tool where I can manage my video projects, but then have those video projects become a library of useful information. Because when we're doing another project in the future, we may have a shot that we want to pull from a previous project, or we may want to refer back to a previous video we did, look at the script, that kind of thing. So Notion was really the only tool that I could find that would allow me to manage the entire content creation process of videos in production, to capture ideas, and then to maintain that useful archive. I remember like trying this out in ClickUp back in the day, and they were like, well, if you accidentally archive something, it'll be deleted in 30 days or something like that. So, and I think they have tried to get up to parity with Notion in the intervening years, but back then they were like, nope, we just do task management and it's not an archive. So we got into using Notion for content creation. And because so much of my life revolves around that, I kept thinking, well, how can I start to do my note-taking in here? How can I start to do my research process and all that kind of stuff? And from there, it's just been like this constant 4-year process of seeing like, how can I bring the best parts of the tools I used to have to juggle into this one system for managing my entire content creation process. So how can I essentially recreate Evernote inside of Notion? How can I essentially recreate Todoist or Asana inside of Notion? And Creator's Companion was the first product we developed out of that, which was literally our own internal content creation pipeline across all of our channels, just turned into a product. We released that first, it did really well. And then Ultimate Brain was sort of the next step, which was my own personal journey of trying to figure out how can I do a full-on productivity system inside this one tool. So it really has just been like, this is the stuff that I have wanted myself for this long. And I'm very fascinated with Notion as a sort of enabling tool that allows people to create their own tools within it. So along my own path of building this stuff, I was making video tutorials and people enjoyed them. So I realized I think there might be a little side business that's also like potentially viable here. And it's doing better than I initially anticipated. At first, I thought it'd be like an extra, you know, $5K a month on top of my sponsorship income. At this point, it may replace my sponsorship income.
Wow. Okay. So that's a big thing right now, right? Like a lot of creators are finding other ways to monetize their content creation. So of course you have like your Google AdWords, you have like sponsorship, but a lot of people now are doing like products, like whether that's like merch. And now with digital products, it makes so much sense. And it's so embedded to what you're talking about and what you're the kind of content that you're putting out. So I'm actually really interested to hear, like, now that you have it all set up, what would you say is like your main like traffic source? That is it your YouTube? Is it purely like monetizing YouTube, or is it the other way around?
I would say that it's not a great direct traffic driver until, well, literally yesterday, we finally published the Ultimate Brain tutorial on YouTube. I think we had a couple of videos that had mentioned there's a wait list because I published those before the product had launched. But I have like the classic internet marketer funnel where I've got free stuff. And then if you want to, you can sign up for my newsletter. And I actually provide a bypass because I don't like products that force you to get on the newsletter, but you can. And then, you know, first thing is like, hey, we also have this premium product if you want. I do believe on the Ultimate Tasks landing page, which is the free task manager template, there's a little thing that's like, hey, if you want a full-on notes, projects, goals, and tasks system, you can upgrade to Ultimate Brain as well. So there are several ways people can find the sales page. What I don't have right now is like really robust analytics to tell me exactly where people are coming from. It's something I would definitely like to do, but I guess for some context into my history, I've been making content for 10 years, full-time. 12 years since I literally started the blog, but full-time as my job for 10 full years. And it took me 8 years to make anything that I sold of my own. I mean, I had like Skillshare courses, that's on Skillshare. So I'm, you know, completely relying on their marketing platform other than me just telling people to go to it. I had like an Amazon book, but making my own product took me 8 full years to do. And it wasn't as if I had the idea 8 years in and did it. I had the idea probably 2-3 years in and then constantly procrastinated because I thought, well, my funnel's not going to be perfect, or I don't know how to deal with VAT tax, or I don't know how to deal with analytics, and I'm going to lose my UTM tracking if I don't get this exact perfect tool. And I literally spent like 5-6 years not putting out a product, not making money, because I was mired in this perfectionism. So for Creator's Companion, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go quick and dirty. I'm just going to choose whatever works. Gumroad, cool. People seem to be using Gumroad. It has some cons, sure, but I'm going to use it. I'm going to use WordPress and Elementor. I don't care. And I just got it out there and I just started using, you know, the tools I had access to. And from that point, I've been able to start slowly changing things up. So I guess that's my main message to anybody who is also thinking about doing their own digital products is, just get something working, get an MVP, get some data from your customers, and then you can always improve and tighten the funnel later on.
Yes, man, that's great advice. And it's funny, like one of the reasons literally why I have you on here is because I want to ask these questions specifically about this. Like you, I've thought like, oh my God, I have all these systems in my Notion that like all I have to do is duplicate it and make it available for people. And why stop at making it free? Why wouldn't people pay for something that they would use all the time? Like a daily journal that has like everything you'd ever need. In your case, like an ultimate second brain. Like, why wouldn't people do this? It's going to speed up their workflows. It's going to improve their life. And if they're already using Notion, it's a no-brainer for them to just integrate. And it's like really cool that you can build these products now with no code tools. Like you can basically build an app. Like you essentially built your own productivity app not having to code it, not having to hire a developer. You're able to do it in Notion. But while we're on this topic of the Notion templates, what do you really think actually makes for a successful Notion template? Like, obviously, you have the second brain thing. What was it about that that you're like, okay, I want to make this a paid template that people might want to buy?
So a part of it was, this is what I wanted. So there was a lot of my own desire put into it. But I also realized there's, like, judging from the questions that come into my content, there's a lot of demand for this kind of thing as well. People are asking, how do I take notes in Notion? How do I do task management in Notion? I can look at my own YouTube stats and get useful information based on that. My task manager tutorial has 500,000 views on a really small channel, you know, only 60,000 subscribers now. And that video gets over 1,000 views a day. And it's coming up on 2 years old at this point. Like, I need to remake it. Notion has changed a lot. But when there's 500,000 people watching an hour long tutorial on how to make a task manager, that's useful information from a product design standpoint. These people are signaling, this is what we want instead of Notion. And if they want task management, do they want better project management? Do they want goal tracking? And, you know, combined with that data, we can just literally listen to what our audience tells us and get information that way. So that sort of guided my selection process. I also noticed that there's just this growing interest in the PKM space, or personal knowledge management space in general. People like Tiago Forte are starting to get a lot of notoriety. He's got a book coming out, Ali Abdaal. All these people who talk about note-taking and PKM are getting a big audience. So people are obviously very interested in this space in general. That is sort of also what informed my choice for going with Para as my organizational philosophy inside of Ultimate Brain. Partly because people are already very interested in it. I think it is actually a very good system. And from a product design standpoint, I think that it's not always useful to try to invent every single wheel. So I knew there aren't a lot of second brain templates out there, and I don't want to go like try to copy someone else's anyway. I want to build this myself, but I don't want to also try to come up with my own organizational philosophy at the same time. So can we build this around Para? Can we build this around established getting things done principles? That actually gave me sort of like a North Star from an in the trenches sort of technical product design standpoint. I think another thing that helps us be successful is I am willing to do a ton of work to go beyond where I see most templates stopping. So most templates are like, here's the template. Maybe here's a couple of tutorials. That's it. No refunds, which makes sense because you can't return a Notion template. But my thought is, how can I make the customer experience as great as it possibly can be? Well, number one, make it risk-free. So we offer refunds. We have actual support in a support forum. We have world-class tutorials, written video. I literally just spent like $570 on captions the other day. We buy human-created captions for our tutorials. We do interactive tutorials. Anything we can do to make the customer experience better, we're going to do it. And that means it's a lot of work. It means I'm going to have to hire people. I will have to scale my business past where it is and get out of my comfort zone. But I think that's what it takes.
Right, because you're building an actual product here. Whether it's a template as part of another product, like, it just kind of changes my view anyways of like what a tool is, or what like an app could be, because you basically built an app within Notion as the platform. And mm-hmm. on that note too, like, you went even more like the extra mile. You have a whole community, a whole support community built on Circle, I believe, right?
Yep. Yeah, we use Circle. And then I've got an actual part-time support person who's in there every day. We use Loom to record screencasts, to answer questions, basically like try to go as far as we can to help people with any question they have.
Right. And like, what kind of questions do people have? Like, when they're, do they have problems setting things up, or is it like they're using it for a couple of days? What are the biggest kind of problems you're seeing people have?
I mean, it runs the gamut. So we'll have like the basic questions like, hey, I don't know how to unlock my database so I can make a customization, to how would I integrate my CRM template? And, you know, we can't go as far as like, here's, you know, 8 hours of consulting for free, but we do go pretty far. And one principle we have is that if we're going to be answering support questions, we turn it into documentation. This is something that I learned when I was in college, actually. I had a job at the campus IT center, and the rule was, if there's not a support article about the problem you just helped the customer solve in our database, you have to write one after you get off the call. This ended up with some pretty funny results sometimes, because we would get some pretty zany people calling in. I had a call once where the lady was like, I have a raccoon on my deck. How do I get rid of it? And I'm like, this is IT. I mean, I guess you could write an email to the raccoon. But I literally had to write a support article about how to get a raccoon off your deck and put it in our support database, because that was the rule. But it saves so much time, because there are very common questions, and sometimes they have a technical explanation, and sometimes you're hiring brand new support techs who don't really know what they're doing. Well, if there's an article they can go to, they can easily just guide the customer through it. So that's one of our principles. Create documentation out of anything that could feasibly be a repeated question. So we're just getting this growing database of really useful support documents, which we can easily point people to. And that means, that principle means, sometimes it is worth taking literally 2 hours to answer one question.
Right.
So one tutorial that did not exist in our getting started guide at first was, how do I integrate Readwise into Ultimate Brain? It's actually not a very easy answer, because Readwise does not allow you to select which Notion database you're sending your highlights to. They create one for you, which means if you really want to do it, you have to basically like integrate the Readwise database into the product. That took me a couple of hours to figure out, but I'm like, well, now I have a full video tutorial that just comes with the product, and I can go make content on this because it's something that people want to do in general. So it's just kind of an interesting insight. Customer support makes you better at your product, gives you a deeper knowledge, because they're going to ask to do things that you would have never thought of. And what you do to answer their questions often gives you content ideas.
Wow.
So it's just always worth doing.
Win, win, win. Yeah, a lot of people try to avoid it, right? Or like they'll have like, again, like the community mm-hmm. group, like, oh, ask someone else in the community. But again, going the extra mile, yeah. It's just going to feed right back. And it's this great flywheel that's going to keep turning.
Yeah. And we did choose Circle. We did choose the community model because I did want to have the option of other people coming in and sharing what they've done. And people actually do. To my surprise, there's like customers, people who have given me money to then like help people out in the support community, which is cool.
It's awesome.
Maybe I'll hire them at some point. But also Notion being such a customizable tool, people love to share like what they've done to change Ultimate Brain for their own workflows. And there's some really, really creative stuff people have done, stuff that I would have never thought to do. And the cool thing is, like, you know, when you're like building a productivity tool, you're only ever doing it from a bird's eye view, because you can only really get a surface look at what people in any given field are doing. But once somebody gets their hands on it, then they can tweak it to, like, say, support a PhD dissertation workflow, something I couldn't do very well because I've never written a dissertation. But they can come in and be like, well, here's the tweaks I've made to support my dissertation research. And it's just such a cool experience seeing them share that.
It is cool. And what's really awesome about the template and what you built is it's just like, it's pretty agnostic, right? Like, it's not specifically for, like, your other one was purely for content creators, which I would imagine now mm-hmm. Ultimate Brain has a wider audience because of that. Someone who's a PhD yes. student will be able to use it. Someone who's like also a content creator could also technically use it. People mm-hmm. in everyday work and life. It's really, really interesting. And it truly is like the ultimate way to use Notion. And I love that you're saying before how like you're like, I'm basically rebuilding Evernote in Notion, rebuilding Todoist. So I'm actually interested. What did you use before Notion? And like, what was your aha moment when you like discovered Notion to be like, okay, I just need to do this and just go all in? Or do you use other tools?
I mean, it was Evernote for notes. And that was like, boy, almost 10 years. I think I started Evernote in like 2009 when I was in college. So that was pretty much my note-taking app for my whole adult life. Mostly Todoist for task management. I came from Wunderlist before that shut down back in the day. Remember the milk earlier than that for anybody who's ancient like me. I still use Google Calendar. That's one thing Notion's not great at is calendar stuff. So still Google Calendar for that. And I've still got, you know, like Slack and that kind of stuff. But at this point, you know, really what I wanted was a dashboard if I'm working on a project where I can see all of my tasks and do whatever I would need to with those tasks, give them a status, due date, whatever, and all the notes and research. And sometimes my projects have ridiculous notes and research. And I just wanted a place where I could see all that in one spot from any device. And Notion gives me that.
Totally.
Otherwise, I have to jump back and forth between Evernote and Todoist and stuff like that. And Todoist doesn't have great template support as well. You have to like import a template as a CSV, which is just very weird to me. And that was a big thing for me is like, well, as a content creator, there's like a zillion little things I need to do for every video. And I need a checklist. So I can create a template. Boom. I think that was really what it was. is this ability to create these database templates and then apply them on every project. That was like one of the biggest aha moments for me, because I'm like, well, cool. If I have something like video production where I'm going through this multi-step process every week, I don't have to reinvent the wheel every time that I'm doing a new video. I can just boom, start from template, and I've got my shot list, I've got my checklist, I've got my script area. It's all there.
Right. And what I notice is you're really good at that, of like systematizing things. Do you think that is from your background in, was it software development technically?
I went to school for MIS, which is information systems. So it's really like, I mean, a little bit of software dev they teach, but it's more of a general major that sort of mixes business and technology. A lot of people go off to infrastructure. A lot of people go off to project management, business development kind of stuff. A lot of people are like the go-between the techies and the people who don't know anything about technology.
And that's what you're doing for the masses,
I personally, I think so, yeah. I don't think my classwork really built that systems mindset for me. I almost think that my on-campus jobs did more.
Oh, what did you do on campus?
Like doing the IT support stuff, learning that documentation process. I worked in the web development department on campus as well. I did my own freelance web dev on the side. So there were a lot of opportunities to understand the value of building systems, especially when you're doing your own business. Like, you know, time is money and you're trying to get things done for a client really quickly. You want to build systems that help you out. Even something as simple as utilizing the quick link sidebar in your Windows Explorer so you can get to the folders that you're working on as quickly as possible. Like, that's a systems mindset at work.
It is. And I mean, it makes so much sense using the Notion database and the way databases connect to each other. It really is like building like software databases that will speak to each other. I remember I had that aha moment when I first discovered like Airtable, and I wasn't really into like databases. There's actually Airtable and Webflow CMS, because Webflow has a very similar data structure as a Notion or a Airtable database. That's why a lot of people use that for their no code stack. But then when Notion came out, I was like, shit, it's like all these things in one, plus Evernote, plus your task management. And they're only adding more features. And I'm sure there's so many things in the pipeline that are coming. It's been crazy. Do you get kind of scared, or like, I don't know if scared is the right word, but you ever get like nervous that like everything is in Notion? Like if something goes wrong, goes down, do you have any backups? Like, how do you mitigate all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, a lot of that stuff is relying on Notion's database sharding and their own backups. Admittedly, I don't have like a religious export process. When I ask myself like, what would happen if they went down tomorrow? A lot of my stuff, like I guess most of what's in there is stuff that's already been done.
That's true.
There would be some recreation. I guess like the way I think about it is, it's, I don't see it as a likely event. In the way, like, I don't see, you know, yeah, like, I don't see my house going into a sinkhole as a likely event.
True. But again, insurance, man, do you think we'll have, like, some kind of, like, digital insurance? Like, I don't even know how that would work, but I feel like more and more of our life is online, whether it's, like, people who have all of their memories stored on iCloud from their iPhone and their notes on Notion and Evernote. I think maybe that's a new billion-dollar industry, man, digital insurance.
Yeah. I mean, like if there was a, like, export, true export button in Notion, I would love that. And I want that.
Yeah.
But there's the reality that we're in. And I guess, like, you know, with the time that I have dedicated to everything else, it just doesn't seem like it's worth sitting around fretting, trying to come up with some, like, I don't know, 2 hours I spend every Sunday exporting everything, something like that.
Right. Which would, and I'm assuming as it grows and grows and grows, it's only going to take longer and longer and longer. And then there's redundancies every single time you do it. Cause it's like, okay, well, I have everything past that point from last week or last month.
Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah, super interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that's the thing I say is like, if that's more of a concern to you, the same thing where if it's like, you know, I want pure end-to-end encryption, it's not the tool for you, because it was built from a multiplayer standpoint. It's built from a, you know, software as a service standpoint. Something that's local first, like Obsidian, is more built from that, okay, here's my vault, it's mine, it's on my computer, that kind of thing. If that's your value, that's the tool you should use. But you do give up some of those multiplayer aspects. You do give up like the real-time collaboration aspects. You literally can't do that in Obsidian.
True, there's always going to be trade-offs for everything. Do you use other tools? Yep. Like, do you use Roam or Obsidian?
I mean, I've played with both, but I end up back on Notion either way.
True, and I'm guessing like you have a growing library of notes and stuff. So do you find yourself like, the people who probably use Roam and Obsidian, they love to connect ideas a little bit more. I think now Notion has like an inline page referencing and backlinks, which is awesome that they have that. Do you find yourself like using that? Do you find yourself getting compound interest from your previous notes and previous projects and previous database entries?
I do it on an as needed basis. So like there are people who religiously, like if they type a term and they know, oh, I have a page for that or an atomic note for that, they do that. I don't do that at all. I tried it, and I definitely tried like the whole Roam thing, building the knowledge garden. It's just, I fall off of it so fast. I think, you know, if I need to find something, I'll search for it, or I'll use my organizational structures for it. My brain, for better or for worse, works hierarchically. I understand my folder structure. I understand my areas and resources structure. I don't really need to create like a big knowledge graph. But when I'm, say, doing research and I realize like, oh, hey, it would be smart for me to link to this specific page here because I do think I will need to click that and get to it faster, then I will do it.
Purely out of productivity, not knowledge management, just to quickly get to where you need to go.
Yeah, it's more like, okay, I'm, let's just say for right now, I'm working on my new task manager guide that it's going to be updated for 2022. So there's a technical reference. There is a formula guide that the users will actually use. There's the actual template itself. Inside of my project for that, I'll be linking to those things.
And like, as you're saying, this is funny, like the next question that really just pops in my mind is like around these tips and tricks of becoming a better Notion user to like do these things a little bit quicker. But I'm like, I'll just link your TF Explains YouTube because that will have everything. I don't need to ask about the nitty gritty. Like these are like 1 hour fucking deep dives that you go into to like really explain like certain things, or like if a new feature comes out, you're like one of the first people, if not the first person, that comes to my YouTube recommendation to watch these things. So maybe we can kind of like switch corners. I want to get into this content creation TF Explains kind of workflow here, because I think we talked about it on Twitter actually. I was like, oh, why did you end up making a second YouTube channel specifically for Notion? Why didn't you just put on your main channel and then have those people who are searching for Notion find you and then find your other videos and then grow your main channel? So I'm wondering.
You know, you look at my channel, I have like a few Notion videos on the main channel and they've done pretty well. But I wanted to create the resource for anybody who wants to become knowledgeable and learn how to build their own tools using Notion, which means that not only are we going to have the build guides that probably could have worked on my main channel, but there's also going to be more in-depth technical videos. So there's like Notion Fundamentals series where it's like, here's how to link pages. There's eventually going to be a video on sharing and permissions. And that kind of video would just utterly tank on my main channel, because the purpose of my main channel is to, in general, help people become more productive, more capable, more organized. It's a general self-improvement channel. So there's just, I think, a threshold of technicality that if you go beyond it, you're going to alienate your audience so hard that you risk starting to damage the channel, especially if you do it over and over and over again. So in the case of Thomas Spring Explains, there's 30 videos on the channel now, and I have probably hundreds planned and ideas. And if I made all of those in the main channel, not only would they start to dilute what that main channel is, I think they would actually outpace the flow of new content that really fits the channel, just because it doesn't take me very long to film a Notion video, especially if I already know what I'm talking about. You know, if I wanted to, I could probably do 2 videos a week. So my thought was, okay, let's let the main channel still be what it is, and we'll go build a whole new resource. And that will be people, and like the idea is, in people's minds, the go-to when I want to learn Notion is Thomas Frank Explains. That's where I go.
So
not let me go to Thomas Frank and let me find the right playlist or sift through all these videos to find the Notion stuff.
True. Why didn't you call it something like Notion with Thomas? Why TF Explains?
So I tried to come up with a name. I specifically was not going to put Notion in the name. I never want to build anything of mine that is branded around another company. So it's either going to be branded around me or it's going to be a brand I come up with. Because, you know, and I don't want this to happen, but someday what if Notion goes under? Or what if Notion changes so much that it's no longer in alignment with what I'm trying to do? Well, now I've stuck my name with them. I'm essentially hitching my wagon to their train with no guarantee that it's always going to be going in the same direction. So my goal is to make the ultimate Notion resource, but it doesn't have to be branded around Notion. And we tried to come up with the names. We literally like sat around for 2 hours with a brainstorming session, came up with 70 different names. I hated them all, or the ones that were good, all their social handles were taken. So I'm like, you know what? I'm sitting here spending weeks just like paused on any content production because I can't think of a name. Screw it. I'm just going to call it Thomas Frank Explains. I'm going to register no social handles, and it's just going to be under all my own social handles. It's just going to be me.
Oh, man.
And that allowed me to just get past that hurdle and start making content.
Okay, so this is the second time now that you've inadvertently given really, really, really good advice of just getting started, just doing the MVP, making it nitty gritty, just do it. First there's the Gumroad and just using WordPress, and now it's just like, screw the social handles, I'm just call it my name and use my own social media. I think that's brilliant, man. Did you have that kind of inclination when you first started content creation like 10 years ago? Do you have that same mindset, or has it shifted? How has it changed?
When I first started, so I guess like the beginning of my content creation story is I went to college and there was a blog I was reading at the time called Hack College. It was essentially Lifehacker written by college students for college students. And I just loved it. I was reading every article they put out. I was laser focused on being the best student I could be because I went to school right after the 2008 stock market crash. So I went into college thinking the world is ending and I have to be as competitive as possible. Otherwise, I won't get a job. That was my mindset. And, you know, luckily the world basically recovered. And as it turns out, you didn't have to work that hard to get a job, but the effort still paid off, I think. But that was my mindset. So I'm like, okay, well, I have to literally ring and squeeze college for everything it's worth. And I read literally every college prep book they had in my library before going to college. And then I found this blog. And then at the end of my freshman year, they said, hey, we're looking for new writers. And I'm thinking this is going to be a great resume booster opportunity. And I like to write. So I sent them my application. I wrote this full guest post for them and ended up getting rejected. So I'm like, well, I wrote this whole guest post and they're not going to take me. I'm just going to make my own blog. And because I wanted to write for them, I basically just used their model. And I'm like, well, I can't just call it thomasfrank.com. It has to be a thing. It's got to be a publication. Same thing. I couldn't think of a good name. So the first thing that came to mind, College Info Geek, I was just like, let's just do it. It's three words, a lot of syllables, but whatever. It got me my domain so I could start writing. That was the biggest thing. And for the longest time, I was like, yeah, it's got to be a publication. It's got to be a publication. But then as I started getting into social media, and especially as I started getting into YouTube, I realized like there's a lot of brands that are being built around people, not around brands. And if I start to shift the branding around me, I can act like me. I can be me on social media. And I enjoy that more than tweeting under the College Info Geek Twitter handle. So personally, and I realized there's some downsides to this, but personally, I enjoy branding things around myself and just sort of being me. It's like, hey, I made this. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
And obviously the elephant in the room, the big downside is that makes it harder for me to exit if I ever wanted to. I don't have a huge desire to exit what I'm doing. And I think at this point I've proven to myself that I can execute pivots where I can leave things behind that I don't necessarily want to do anymore. And I can do different things without, you know, feeling limited by the fact that I'm branded around myself. In fact, being branded around myself honestly makes me feel like I have more freedom. Because back when it was College Info Geek, I'm like, well, what if I want to write something for people who are out of college? We have a ton of great articles on College Info Geek that people will probably never read because the site is called College Info Geek. I mean, we got investing articles. We have articles on like how to get started with your 401k, how to buy a house, but who's going to read them if they're not in college with that name? So at this point, like, honestly, the content that we publish on College Info Geek is almost like an incubator for videos I could make later on.
That's super cool. And I guess like you don't have to worry about like failing as much because it's kind of like this tighter niche and not as many people are going to see it. Like I'm seeing some of your most popular videos on YouTube get seen by like 6 million people. Like that's huge, man. Like your channel has absolutely blown up. The quality you're putting out is so good. The information, the content itself is so damn useful. Like there's no way it could fail, really. I mean, sure, in your mind, you're like, fuck, like this can all go away overnight, but I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think you've built a pretty good trench for yourself. And it's pretty funny. Like just you going through that story kind of answered like literally four questions I had about these kind of things, which is really, really cool. So I guess going back then, how did you start to learn audio and video production? Because you didn't study that in school, but you started creating this content first writing and then into video. How did you start learning this stuff? And like, what was your process to get started?
Pretty much everything I've done started off as I was following somebody and really enjoying them doing it. And then I go, well, I kind of want to do that myself. And one of the biggest concepts I've always taught on the CIG blog and on my main channel is the idea of being a solution finder. So if you have a question, go out and find the solution because it is out there, especially with the internet now. And with everything I've ever done, the solution has always been out there, whether it's going and finding a guide somebody wrote or taking a class or often just like digging into the code of people's websites. I use Inspect Element a lot to figure out how people do things.
I love that.
So that's how I learned web design and code. I just used Inspect Element and I read people's code and then tried it out for myself. For podcasting, so I've been running the blog and I was a huge fan of Pat Flynn and Smart Passive Income. And the biggest thing I was a fan of was the podcast. And I remember like listening to him sort of reflect on this fact from the perspective of other listeners. They'd say, they'd come up to him at conferences and say, I love the podcast. I love the podcast. I feel like I'm hanging out with you. They kept mentioning the podcast. And I was like, you know what? He's right. I feel like I know Pat, even though we've never spoken. I feel like I know Pat because I listen to the podcast. The blog is a little bit of a secondary thing almost in my head. So that sort of gave me the idea of, okay, I want to do a podcast. Well, how do I do that? Turns out Pat had a whole series of articles and videos on his site that I followed to the letter to get my podcast off the ground. I bought the Blue Yeti mic like everyone starts with, and I followed his exact instructions to do album art and get it submitted to iTunes, get hosting and all that stuff. And boom, I was off podcasting. And then for video, it was sort of the same thing. I started watching a lot of YouTube just because I was enjoying it. Partly from a business perspective, I was watching like the Fizzle guys. I was watching Sean McCabe on Sean West TV. And then I was also watching stuff that I enjoy just for fun, like video game reviewers, like I think like John Tron, Peanut Butter Gamer, those kind of people. And I really liked their editing because it was very energetic and crazy and had graphics all over the place. So again, I was like, well, I enjoy watching this. I want to try it. So I started making videos and started off with this like this kind of crappy camera that I had. I lit myself with desk lamps and then just like had this very slow process of learning every single video something new because I was inspired by something I saw and I wanted to figure out how to do it. You can go back and look at my early videos and you'll see like, okay, well, this first video has almost no graphics whatsoever. And then the second video has some like rudimentary animations. Well, that was what I was interested in. And then another video has like background music. My brother made me some like really basic background music when he was trying to build rap beats for himself. And I'm like, cool, I want to figure out how to mix that in with my dialogue. I use this principle called the 1% rule for my video production process, which is I put myself on a schedule, it was once per week. And with every video, I try to learn something new, just get like a little bit better in some area. And it could be whatever you're interested in. Like I'm going to be better at having eye contact with the camera this time, or I'm going to try a new lighting setup. I'm going to do an overhead lighting this time, or I'm going to try doing like particle effects and After Effects to do like dust around me or something like that. Literally anything. And you'll notice that if you're on a schedule and you're doing this consistently, then one day you're going to wake up 10 years down the road. You're going to go, holy crap, I just gave myself a Hollywood level film school education without paying for it.
Dude, literally, like if you were to see anyone who's listening to this, just go to the YouTube version, please, or just go to Thomas's YouTube channel. Because like even for the podcast, like it looks like you're on a professional film set, which it is. That's literally what you've built. And that's like a decade basically, right? Of like getting here, of like small steps all the time. It doesn't really happen overnight. I'm sure now it could happen overnight, technically, if you have the money to buy the equipment. You can watch some of your videos, watch some of Matt Diavella's videos. He has a whole course. Ali, I think, has a course now. Like you can, or just on YouTube, there's like filmmakers who have these like tutorials of here's how you do it. Learn it, set it up, and maybe overnight you technically could nowadays because it's cheap enough to actually do it. But it took you like a decade, man. It's like it's crazy to see over a long time horizon how things change. Like, has it blown your mind? Like, how has YouTube changed for you and like the kind of content that you're building now?
I mean, it's cool to look back and see everything. I'm not sure if it's like mind blowing. There's that, I think they call it Gates' Law. I don't even know if Bill Gates said this, but it's like you. Everyone overestimates what they can do in a day, but they underestimate what they can do in a decade. And it's like, so it's so true. You always wake up and you say, oh, I'm going to get this, this, and this done. And then you don't, which always happens. But if you stick to something for a decade, you'll be absolutely astounded at what you can do. And I don't even think it's a decade. Like, it's a couple of years. If you, you know, got into content creation or no code or whatever it is, and you gave 2 years of true 1% rule effort where you're getting consistently better and you're practicing deliberately, you're going to be able to do so much.
Wow. What's your biggest advice for consistency? Because that seems like that's the number one thing. Just doing it over and over again over a long period of time. Like, what is your biggest tip for people who, like, I know consistency is the biggest hurdle for a lot of people. They'll do it once, twice, kind of stop. How do you keep going?
You have to get some kind of external motivator. So I will recommend a video I made last year called The 5 Levels of Self-Discipline. And the real crux of the idea in that video is that people are compelled to do things either because there is some kind of intrinsic interest in the moment, i.e. it's fun, like, oh, I want to do that, or because they have a duty to do so. And duty is the word that I like to focus on here, not necessarily self-discipline, but duty. What do you have a duty to? Is it a duty to your past self? And how have you systemized that and externalized that so your past commitments are real and have teeth? Or is it a duty to somebody else? So I can break it down really quickly. The first level is duty to yourself, and that is codified and made more real through using external tools. The one that I used was called BeeMinder, and it is literally a website where you can put in a habit that you want to track and you bet money on it. So, and it has all these API connections. So the way I did it was I hooked it up to my YouTube channel, and it would look for at least one new video being published on my channel per week. And if it didn't happen, it would charge me money.
That's awesome.
And for like 3 straight years, I never once was charged money on that. And I had a video every single week. I used to do the same thing for getting out of bed on time. There's an article on CIG about this, also a video, but I used to have a tweet scheduled in Buffer that said, I'm sleeping in. If you see this, reply for $5. And I would have to wake up every day, turn my computer on, and delete the tweet or move it forward a day. Otherwise, it would go out. And it was also hooked up to BeeMinder. So it'd be a double whammy. BeeMinder would charge me, and then anybody who replied would be able to charge me too. Never once did I sleep in. There was one time I got up on time but forgot to do the tweet. So everyone saw it, and I had to shell out like $30. But yeah, like, build systems that codify your commitments to your past self. That's level one. And then levels 2 through 5 are all about bringing in other people to help you be consistent in your journey. So the second one might be an accountability partner, just somebody who is actually going to hold your feet to the fire. And this, I think you have to select strategically. A lot of people just go, hey, to their friend who's like on the couch eating Cheetos, I'm going to start running every day. And their friend's like, okay, that's cool. And you feel good. He's like, yeah, I told my friend I was going to start running every day. And then you don't. And they don't do anything about it. You got to find a friend who actually cares. So my friend Martin is somebody who actually cares. A few years ago, I was like, hey, I want to read nonfiction every single day. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read 25 pages a day for the next 3 months, every day without fail. I'm going to log my progress on a spreadsheet, and I'm going to give you access to that spreadsheet. If I skip a day, I owe you $100. And he's the kind of guy who would check. And some days it would be like 11 p.m. and I hadn't read yet. And he's like, are you going to read? Because otherwise I'm taking your money. And I'm like, they're reading at 11:50 p.m. to finish my thing. But he's also not the kind of friend who really wants to sabotage me, because he cares less about the money than he cares about my progress and me improving as a person. So find yourself a person who cares about that. If you don't have somebody directly in your life, there are accountability groups online you can get into. There's Reddit, like subreddits for that. There's Habitica, or Habit, used to be Habit RPG. They have like these guilds. Just, there are tons of people out there who want to help you be accountable and want help being accountable. Level 3 is hire a coach. So that is just bringing your accountability buddy into the professional realm, which can also bring with it the benefits of coaching expertise. You bring a subject matter expert who can actually guide you and help you learn faster and get better as well. Level 4 would be getting yourself into a team where your effort and your consistency is also integral to the team's progress. So a good example of that would be like, okay, I want to get better at basketball. I'm going to go join a league, because then my progress actually helps my team as well. And if I slack off, I'm hurting them. And level 5 is leadership. That is less of a hack. I don't think you should take on a leadership role specifically to like try to hack your own motivation. But when we're talking about this model of how duty augments your self-discipline, when you're a leader, the duty to your to the people who you are leading is highest. So that's the highest level of the model.
Wow. Okay, dude, that was incredible. Thanks for sharing on here. And I'll also link the video in the show notes for this podcast for people who want to dive deeper into that. That's incredible. I think I actually remember watching that video, I think last year in the summer sometime. Mm. That is so awesome. And for you, like, how did you learn all that stuff? So like, you're obviously really big in the personal development and self even discipline stage. Like, what was your awakening moment for that? Were you always like that, like as a kid, or was there something that kind of like pushed you towards this to becoming, you know, not just on the productivity side, but also just in self-development to become better?
I don't think there was any sort of aha moment. Even growing up in high school, I've always been pretty driven. I attribute some of that to my parents. They were pretty strict and pretty demanding of me growing up. Some of that was literally graduating in the middle of the stock market crash of 2008 and having to go to college and having a very uncertain future. That was compounded by the fact that my parents couldn't pay for my college. So I was like, you can either get scholarships if you want to go to 4-year, or you can work full time and go to community college because we can't pay. So I was like, cool, I have to figure it out. Otherwise, I'm going to be stuck here in my hometown while my friends go off to college and I want to go to college. So, you know, I would spend like 3 hours a day signing up for scholarships and stuff like that. So it's, you know, partly like I always had big goals that I want to pursue. I've always been very fascinated by a lot of pursuits. So I've had to just figure out how to be disciplined to be able to make progress in a lot of areas.
Totally. And do you attribute that to like your dad? I know you've mentioned in videos before, like he got you like weightlifting really young and stuff like that. Has that been part of this? Like kind of that self-discipline of like working out and bodybuilding and lifting early on?
I mean, I definitely think it's part of it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, both my parents definitely instilled a work ethic. My dad would have me do like book reports outside of school.
Wow, that's awesome.
It's like, school's not hard enough. I'm going to assign you this book and you have to write a book report on it.
That's cool.
And he'd always grade way harder than my teachers. I don't think I ever got an A.
I love that. That's amazing. And I guess on that note too, yeah, you just said that you do a lot. You're interested by a lot of different things. I kind of want to get this in because I know we only have a couple more minutes. You have the impossible list. I'm going to link it for people who want to learn more about it. Dude, like what, first of all, what is an impossible list? And then how do you tick those things off? Like you said, you're interested in a lot of different things. How do you find the balance? How do you juggle?
Yeah. So the impossible list was created by a friend of mine, Joel Runyon. And I've got a whole episode with him on my podcast, the College Info Geek podcast. So if you want to hear the full story, it's like episode 48 or something like that. But, he basically created this twist on a bucket list. And his idea was a bucket list is not that active. Like you go do the thing and then you cross it off and that's kind of it. And a lot of times like people just sort of hope it happens to them. So his story was he graduated college in 2009. So he actually came out of college in the middle of all that stock market crap and couldn't find a job. And was like, I think he was like living on his sister's couch for a while. And he said, one day I just like sat down and I made a list of all these things that I thought were impossible to me. And then I started asking like, how could I do these things? And the twist that the impossible list brings into the equation is after you check off a goal, you iterate on it. So if I'm like, okay, I want to bring 1,000 visits to my blog in 1 month, which was, I believe at one point, one of my things, I crossed it off. But now I made a bullet point underneath it. Okay, now I want to do 5,000. Now I want to do 10,000. Like, how can I keep iterating and getting better and better and better on these goals? So the impossible list is like this constantly growing log of my achievements. And I guess new goals are added that are even harder to reach or even bigger. So it's like constantly thinking bigger, constantly evolving as a person. And Joel made it public on his blog and I was very inspired by it. So I was like, well, I want to make my own. And that was probably 2012. So I've had that up there for a decade. And it, you know, it's like, it's there and it's not like I'm constantly trying to juggle a ton of goals from it. It's more of like a fun thing that helps me always remind myself to keep progressing, but I still sort of follow whatever's interesting to me now. So right now it's like building this Notion business. So a lot of the stuff like, oh, go travel to all these countries, like, I'll get to that eventually. And I don't give myself a bunch of anxiety about the fact that I'm not doing it right now. One little thing that I added to it was the last five. So at the top of the page, like you can see everything, but the first section is the last five I accomplished with their dates. And that's just sort of there as like a, okay, make sure that I'm not resting on my laurels idea. When's the last time I crossed something off of here?
Dude, I love that. And is it purely tracked on your website, or do you have like a Notion page for it and then you update your website?
It's purely on my website. Oh. At some point I may track it. Like now that I've just finished building Ultimate Brain, there's the whole goals thing. I might bring it in there. But yeah, I mean, it's just, it's been on the website for 10 years and that's where I've always just gone to track it.
I love that because you also have a Now page that was inspired by Derek Sivers, which I've been putting that off. I'm going to do it right after this conversation. It's one fucking page I put on my website. I need a Now page. So it's like, I love how having the Now page and that like impossible list as these kind of like ever evolving, updating, sort of like a extended bio, right? It's like, here's what you're doing now. And here's like all the things you've accomplished and that you're also trying to continually to reach. I love that so much.
I never thought about it as an extended bio, but yeah, it kind of is, isn't it?
Right. It almost is. Yeah. You can like link that in your main bio. Like, here's what I'm doing now. Here's my list. Mm-hmm. I love that so much, man. More social media channels need to have something like that. Something a little bit more dynamic than just like 200 characters of what you do. But that's besides the point.
Yeah.
I have a question about the impossible list though. For you, what was the most difficult thing on that list? And what is maybe now the most difficult thing for you that you're trying to reach?
That's a good question. Oh boy. That's a question I'm not prepared for.
I wasn't prepared to ask it either.
And difficult is like, difficult is definitely a loaded question because I could refer to something like, you know, climbing my first mountain. And I remember that was like an incredibly difficult experience in the moment, especially since we stupidly decided to climb it in May. So that was like still just full of snow. And every step was like to our hip in snow. so we did that. Like that was very difficult. But I think in terms of like the one that I perceived as the most difficult that might not ever happen was actually the one that just happened, which was making $100,000 in 1 month from a product launch. I was like, I'm going to put that on there because I've seen like Pat Flynn do it. I've seen people do it, but I'm like, $100,000 a month is a lot, you know, maybe $100,000 like over the course of several months, but $100,000 a month. But then when I was building Ultimate Brain, I'm like, it's time to see if I can do it. And I mean, no joke. This is literally not a joke. On the last day of the month at 11 PM is when it hit $100,000.
No,
I was like up at night refreshing the page because we were so close and I'm like, we're going to do it. And yeah, it was like literally 11 PM on the last night of the month.
Oh, congrats, man. So that must feel amazing.
It was
amazing.
Like total skin of my teeth kind of thing, which it seems like that's often how goals are accomplished. Like you usually don't ever smash through a goal. It's like you just make it and then you set the next goal and that's how progress happens. So yeah, I would say that one was like the most, I think like perceived difficult.
And it's funny now you're looking back on that already and what's the next goal for that? So now that you finished that, you said you add on to it. Are you looking ahead now?
I guess I should set one. I don't think I like sat down and did the next one, but maybe like 250. With the number ones, I found that like at a certain point, I don't want to do the next one.
Mm.
Like with YouTube subscribers, I hit, I think I had 2 million as my last one. And I think there's 5 million on there, but at a certain point I'm like, okay, I don't necessarily care anymore. Like I remember really wanting to hit 1 million subscribers. That was like a North Star. I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to hit 1 million subscribers. And I did it. And then I celebrated for like 5 minutes. And then I was like, okay, now I just feel more pressure. And it was like, my brain wasn't like, okay, now I want 2 million. It was like, all right, well, you did it. And there's like this interesting thing with the way that human brains perceive numbers, because you would think like 2 million would be just as exciting as 1 million, but it's not. We don't think linearly, we think logarithmically or even exponentially. So like to get the same excitement factor as you got from 1 million, you would need probably 10 million. And at that point, it's like, okay, do I really want to be grinding for subscribers up to 10 million? I don't think I care that much. So I sort of like fall like, what do I actually care about? What are the goals I care about? $100,000 was like a really cool thing. And I could be like, well, yeah, I now want to do $1 million product launch. But I don't know if I like truly care to make $1 million in a month. It would be cool. But I don't feel that same like visceral, like that's a really cool goal I want to go for kind of thing.
True. And with numbers too, right? That's so, it's so elusive and like it keeps growing and going, especially with like subscribers. Like I would imagine that'd be an easy way to get really unhappy, especially after like a year or two goes by and you're like, I'm not at 10 million yet. Like what's wrong with me? Meanwhile, you're just focusing on like the input of like just creating great content. And clearly, like you're doing this full time. Like you've been doing it for like 10 years, right? So, I mean, I guess what is sort of your next goal, or maybe not even goal? What is your vision for the YouTube channel? Just to keep going and just putting out great content? Like what is it for you that's your intrinsic or even extrinsic motivator for doing YouTube now?
Right now, I mean, YouTube wise is like a little bit, I guess in terms of my vision, YouTube is a little bit back burner, because what I want is, at least in the short term, is to figure out how can I get any idea I have instantly into my second brain? Whether it's something I want to say, something that I want to write down, something I want to save that I find, how can I build a complete frictionless process for capturing everything into an organized place? That's so interesting to me right now, and I'm not there yet. But I see the path.
I smell some software coming up. Is that the next step?
Yeah, I mean, I see the path. I don't know if it's software or if it's just figuring out the right automations with tools that already exist, but that's like where my interest is right now.
True. And so for you, like I mean, just high level, what are those items? Where are the places that they're coming from? Like, where are the inputs? And then, I mean, you want to get into Notion, obviously, but like, what kind of things would you be saving? Like, is it like tweets? Is it like a website inspiration? Like, what are the types of content and things that you want to put in there? And how are you currently saving them?
Well, yes, all of those. And the biggest one right now is I take a lot of voice notes. So I want perfect transcription of my voice notes automatically in Notion, which I think I actually figured it out. I just need to codify the process.
Current tools?
With current tools, yeah. And make a tutorial on it.
That's cool.
But yeah, there's all these like interesting questions, interesting tech problems around how do I capture everything my brain could create or everything that I discover and stumble upon and get it into this system where I can actually use it interestingly in interesting ways to do cool work. So that's sort of like completely filling my brain right now. And then just like the process of getting everything set up, having support processes and in place, having my content creation process in place and making sure my team is taken care of and that they're able to reach their goals and they're able to financially move up as well.
Dude, that's incredible. I'm very excited for whenever you figure that out and you have a tutorial on. I'm going to be just refreshing TF Explains until it finally pops up. Or I guess, what do you think? Would that go in your main channel or would that be TF Explains because it's Notion specific, getting into Notion?
I think there's going to be both.
Huh.
I think TF Explains is going to have a series of tutorials on how to set up everything. And then I'll probably have like a video eventually on the main channel on like how I capture everything. And that'll just be like almost a showcase. Like, all right, well, what about if you want to take a voice note, here's how you would auto transcribe it. Bam. And there's a tutorial on that, a tutorial on this.
That is amazing. I'm so looking forward to that because you're right. That is exactly the next step. And that's something I think a lot of people struggle with, myself included. I have like 4 or 5 different tools. I have like Pocket for articles. I use Dropmark and raindrop.io for like website inspiration. Like, there's so many different tools and it's all over the place. It's captured all in one place. I have one last question until we get to our little like final section here, because you mentioned the voice transcription. Have you used Descript or have you played around with that yet?
I have not played around with Descript personally. I have a few friends who do. For me, the problem I'm trying to solve is getting ideas turned into transcriptions, and Descript does not have a mobile app. So I use Otter for that, otter.ai. But I do have some friends who I think they do a lot more like voiceover work. So they are kind of reading off of a actual script. And for that, Descript is apparently a very good editing tool. I'm not sure if it would fit our workflow because we're very server-based.
Right.
And from what I know, you have to actually upload your video files to the cloud to work with them in Descript. And like our files are huge.
Yeah, I'd imagine. I think I remember in one of your videos, like, okay, so I'm going to wait for the 60 GB video to upload to our server.
Yeah, the video that I shot 2 days ago was 348 gigs. So wow. That was just the A-roll.
That's insane.
I mean, we've had videos go over a terabyte.
Jeez. And that's just like really long videos, like 4K. What are you shooting in?
4K. And I mean, you know, it's like 4K, 10-bit. Log footage. In some videos, it's like, it's not even that long of a video, but we just shot so much B-roll. And then we go through that.
Oh, true.
That it ends up, you know, we've had a video be a terabyte before because of that.
That's crazy. And do you think it's like overkill because you're like, oh, it's going to get compressed on YouTube anyways? Or is this like, screw it, we want the highest quality, keep it in the archive?
Nah. I mean, I guess it's technically overkill for YouTube now.
But yeah,
I want to have the files.
True. And just quick question on that, what do you use for server? Is it like a custom thing or?
We use basically what Linus Tech Tips uses. So it's a 45 drive Storinator. I think we have like 170 terabytes. We have it in an IT rack, and then there's a 10 gigabit per second Ethernet NIC or network interface card on that. And then we have those installed on our computers too. So I've got 3 Ethernet cords running off of that onto all the computers out here.
That's awesome. It's just local. So you guys have it all in there.
Yeah. And because it's 10 gigabit Ethernet, we can actually edit the files on the server.
Oh, okay. That's
because game 10 change. Gigabit Ethernet is actually faster than 6 gigabit SATA to your internal drives. So as long as you have enough hard drives striped in the correct RAID configuration, to get really nerdy for a second, you can essentially use platter hard drives on a remote server as fast or faster than an SSD would be on your computer.
That just blew my mind.
Now, an NVMe, like literally onto your motherboard, might be still faster, but the long and short of it is we can edit straight off a server with no problems. Oh, and it doesn't need to be over the internet. Like, internet's always going to be, like, our internet's always going to be gigabit, yeah. But we're talking about local networks.
True, true.
As long as you have the tech that supports 10 over every device that you're passing it through, then you can get a 10 gigabit connection to your server.
Okay, that's awesome. I'll be honest with you, man. I could probably talk super nerdy tech with you for hours. I don't want to keep you here for too long because I have a million questions. Again, like, just for me, from having a decade of experience with like content creation. And now, like, I didn't even get into stuff with like what you're doing with like Nebula and Standard. Maybe we can do a part two some point later on. I know you've got a busy summer ahead of you, and congrats on the wedding coming up too, by the way, man. That's going to be awesome.
Thank you. Very excited for that.
Yeah, I bet. It's a big milestone, eh?
Definitely is. Yeah. I mean, I've been with my fiance for almost 10 years. I proposed over 2 years ago, and then I don't know why we just couldn't get married for some reason for 2 straight years.
Oh yeah, I wonder what that was. Man, this is so weird. We have so many interesting similarities. I've been with my fiance for 8 years. I recently got engaged with her, and now we had to wait again another year. So it's gonna be 10 years for us as well. So weird. Such a weird thing.
Well, congrats in advance on your wedding.
Appreciate that, man.
Ours is finally here.
Yeah, I know, right? It's like, oh, I wonder why we couldn't do that for the last 2 years. So hopefully nothing else comes up. Like, that was it. Come on, guys. Like, let's move forward now.
Yep.
Hopefully, man. Yeah, that's awesome. Congrats, dude. It seems like you're really going into a whole new area of life in so many different ways. I mean, congrats on the huge product launch, you know, engagement. It seems like this whole new chapter of life is happening for you. So it's been an honor to be able to speak with you now. Again, after seeing your face on YouTube for years, it's been an honor to speak with you, man. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. This was a great time.
I appreciate it, dude. And before we do go, I do have like a few like last questions. I'd love to end on like a high note. But before we get into that, is there anything that like maybe I missed that we were chatting about? Anything you want to plug? Any kind of parting wisdom for content creators before we wrap this up?
I mean, the main thing I'll harp on is that 1% rule. Find a way to create your consistency and get better. Just follow your interests and get better.
That's awesome. And you know, for anyone listening, we spoke about a lot of specific stuff. It's all going to be in the show notes. I will put all of the Notion templates if you guys are interested in checking that out. I'll also link the video where you walk through it in here as well. So there'll be tons of resources. You talked about podcasts that you've done. You talked about videos. I'll put them all in the show notes. So guys, if you're listening, just go into the show notes. You will find everything linked there. And I guess the last thing now, man, I love to kind of end on a high note. But I kind of know the answer now, I guess. It's like, what is something coming up that you're super excited about that's coming up in the future?
Getting married, dude.
Yeah, exactly. That's awesome. Fast.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that plus, I guess the two work things I have going on right now are just solidifying the Notion template business. And then over on Nebula, we did just recently release a classes site or a classes part of the site. So I have a class on Business 101 for creators. So I'm pretty excited to get some promotion going for that.
Oh, yeah, that's super fresh. I got to check that out, man. Congrats on that, too. So many things, so many things. And like I said, we didn't even get into Nebula. We didn't get into Standard. So maybe at some point we could do a follow-up or something. But, you know, I really appreciate taking an hour to speak with me and chat. And it's been an absolute honor to speak with you on the podcast, man.
For sure.
Excellent. All right. Thank you for everyone listening. I'll see you in the next one. Take care.